Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, everyone. This is Mary Lurson, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, coming to you on Talking Up Music Education via Facebook Live through our wonderful friends at Enter Talk Radio. Please join us and let people know that I'm here with a wonderful guest, singer-songwriter, Vanessa Carlton.
Hello.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hey.
We just completed quite a grand experience downstairs where Vanessa was our featured interview, which we like to call Inside the Practice Room. So thank you for opening up the door.
My pleasure.
Of your creative process. We're also celebrating music education and young people that are traveling on their path to having a career in music. And we ended with the Forte Tenor Trio singing Rihanna.
And Tom Petty. I mean, never heard Tom Petty like that.
Right. And what can happen when one, you know, embraces all the talent of the voice. And it was really exciting. So thanks for being with us. We talked a lot about your process as a singer-songwriter, but let's start with today. What are you working on now? Want to just give us a sneak peek of you're in development, really.
Yeah.
You know?
I have a 3-year-old daughter now. And like I said, downstairs in the ballroom, my husband, who's also a musician, is on tour. So I'm in mom mode. However, I'm still, you know, I'm actually just really diving into writing a new album, a new project. So it is a combination of getting that concept together and also figuring out for the first time how to schedule that around a toddler's schedule.
The previous album was pre-baby.
Yeah, no, exactly. Mm-hmm. I had Liberman came out when Sid was 9 months. I toured it with her, actually. We all went in the van together. But it was all written, actually, before I even got pregnant. It was the majority of it was written and recorded before I even got pregnant. And then I did record one more song while I was pregnant. And then so it was, totally pre-baby. This is my first.
Right. So this is it's called postpartum songwriting.
Yeah.
You could do a little blog about that maybe, right? It's like, how do you fit all this in, right?
Yeah, so it's definitely, you need like a dry erase board, a calendar, you need to figure it all out.
Right. But we were kind of joking with you downstairs that in the audience, we could do a support group for you. And we really could, because the working mother's dilemma
I'm not alone.
Right. But maybe I will admit, though, a lot of us are probably not working as internally as maybe a songwriter is. I mean, it comes from a very deep place, right?
Well, I hope so. I mean, some songs are better than others.
Right.
But you want to get to a very authentic, quiet place within yourself, I think.
You know, during the course of couple of interviews here this week and chatting with so many various members of our community, this word authentic is coming up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that kind of wonderful? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like in a time where we're dealing with a lot of challenges of the information that's flowing around us so fast and whatnot, it seems like that there's a yearning or a pressing in on being authentic and a reinforcement that it's important that we are authentic. Is that part of your process as well, right?
Yes. And, what the truth is everything. And that has to be in your art, in your work. And like some of the younger students were asking me, do you write for your, how do you feel about writing for your audience? Sounds like you never write for your audience only wants you. They just want you. If you're going to connect in a real way with other people over your expression, they are not interested in you trying to figure out what they want, you know, that kind of concept. And I think that's something that people kind of like get into when they have dreams of being famous or the pop world or getting on the radio. It's like, that's always, I think a lot of almost every artist probably has fallen into that weird, not every artist, but many fall into that weird chapter in their writing where they're like, wait, should I try and write something that I think is going to be a huge thing? I mean, it never works in my experience. So
important words just spoken here. I mean, that's very important because I think, you know, there's a lot of impressions about how to get there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everyone. And the popular culture is telling us there's a certain, the path looks a certain way,
mm-hmm.
right? But maybe it's more of a shovel and a spade and you're digging and you're chipping away, right? It's something.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Not to plug anybody's book, but I'm reading a very interesting book right now that has a lot to do with authenticity. It's called Party of One. And it is full of research about how we all think we should be feeling relative to what the popular culture is telling us.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
But actually that the majority of people, it's based on really sound research and, you know, in a lot of insight, is the majority of people are really pretty comfortable finding their authenticity, or that's really what they're seeking.
Mm-hmm.
So keep talking about it, Vanessa, in your music and in your artistry, because I think it's reinforcing a lot of people.
Yeah, will do.
You know, to do their own thing.
Yeah.
As I read about you, it kind of stopped on one place. You talked about that you've read a lot of Joseph Campbell,
mm-hmm.
all the great books that he wrote about archetype and myth. Mm-hmm. When did you read that, and mm-hmm. where were you in your journey, and what did that mean to you?
Well, I read it in high school, but then I revisited when I was working on an album called Rabbits on the Run. And it's The Power of Myth was a book that was like really woven through that album. Joseph Campbell not only breaks down archetypes, and like right now, actually, I'm reading The Power of the Feminine Divine, the goddess book that he wrote. But he really has some interesting things to say about the human brain and the human cravings. And I thought that, you know, particularly for that project, it totally fit, you know, what he was saying and what that album ended up being. So, yeah, like I was saying earlier too, you know, there's times I think it's really important as a writer to keep your curiosity up and start exposing yourself to other artists and other genres and different books and things that are going to add layers to whatever you're doing, or maybe what lead you to a new space mm-hmm. creatively.
I know when I encountered his work, and of course, many people maybe saw the wonderful Bill Moyer series. Have you ever get to see that?
I haven't.
You should pull it up on PBS. He did a whole series of interviews with Joseph Campbell.
Oh, maybe I have seen. It's a collection of stuff.
And
yeah.
hearing him speak mm-hmm. in narrative about all the deep stuff that's in the book, but
yeah.
hearing his voice, I don't know, it just kind of was so, maybe as especially as a woman too,
mm-hmm.
there was something just very calming about it.
He's so observant,
that
yeah.
there's something basic here, right, that we can tap into that is, you know, outside of, again, sort of where how we're told to be, mm-hmm. where happiness looks like,
mm-hmm.
right, the pathway to something or other. But it's really kind of Party of One, right, is sort of.
Yes, we all just want to be heard in a way, you know. I agree. I think he's a great teacher. He doesn't even mean to be, but,
right.
you know, he really
so
is.
So put that on your iPad viewing.
I will, thank you.
When the baby's taking a nap.
Yes.
Or preschool really helps, by the way.
She's in preschool now.
Oh, it really helps, doesn't it?
Yeah. I sleep basically while she's there.
Yeah, I slept.
I should be working, but I just go back to sleep.
I slept and vacuumed, I remember. I slept because that was the only time that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just text me if you need other, all right?
Thank preschool, you, I absolutely will.
Right, play dates, all right, I know. Believe me, we want you to keep writing all this good stuff. So we all know you for the piano riff that launched a million piano lessons. Has anyone ever said that, used that phrase with you?
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
And my mom is a piano teacher. I mean, I just can't tell you how over the moon she is about that.
We need those moments too when someone says, this is cool, right? Piano's hard. It's rigorous. It requires, but it's cool, right?
Yeah.
Was it your first and only instrument? Did you play other instruments
yeah.
along the way?
I mean, I could play a really horrible Twinkle Twinkle Little Star on the violin, kind of like squeak it out there. I can play a couple Christmas songs on the flute.
Flute, really? Did you study flute in school?
I studied flute, yeah.
You did?
I
did you know that I'm a flutist?
Oh, really?
We won't play together though, because I don't play anymore.
I loved it.
Did you love it? Do you still play?
No. I still have my flute, though, from band.
I do, too. It needs to be repaired.
It really needs. Mine needs to be repaired, too.
But maybe there'll be a reunion we'll do.
We could do a flute duo. I'm not sure that would, like...
We'd have
to practice. It's a niche we'd have genre, flute duo.
You know what they say about two flutes? What's worse than two flutes? Two harps.
Really? I can see two harps sounding really good.
It's the tuning thing.
Oh, is it?
You know, it's tough to keep.
Oh, that's interesting.
The overtones are so.
I have to hear that.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I don't know if you'd want to hear it, but no, I'm just teasing.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah. Do you play flute in school?
Yeah, fourth grade.
So music was available to you in school. So all this great grounding was happening with your mother and piano lessons at home. And where did you go to school? What city, state sort of?
I went to school in, Glens Bay, New York. Then Port Jervis, New York.
So in the New York suburbs, sort of.
Then Delaware Valley. Well, I'm from Pennsylvania. Those were right across the border. And then the Delaware Valley School in Milford.
And there was school music there.
And that's a public school. When they, I was in choir, in chorus.
But little violin, little sprinkling of violin.
The violin, I don't know where that came into play. I think that was, my dad plays the fiddle. He's into bluegrass. So... Yeah, I had a moment with the violin.
And then flute in school band program.
And flute in school. Bravo. And choir in school. Yep.
So that was like supporting all this along the way.
Yep.
Right? Did you go to post high school? Did you go to college or did you go right into songwriting?
I took a few courses at Columbia Barnard for like a year.
Yeah. And then you followed.
Never
the
graduated
muse.
Though. Yeah.
And then you followed.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was enough. And that happened quickly, right? You were 21 when Miles
I got
happened.
A publishing deal years before that song came out when I was 19 or 2 years before that song came out. And then I signed a record deal when I was 20. And then...
That's fast, right?
Yeah.
Out of the chute, right?
That was, yeah.
Yeah. And you reflected a little bit on that happening really fast.
A little early. I mean, look, it's nice. I could buy my own couch when I was, which is huge. That was a big deal.
That's a big
deal. I mean,
deal.
That couch was like $900. And I was 18 years old.
Yeah,
so that was a big deal. But yeah, you know, that was, we all have different reactions to things like that, I guess.
But then you had this, you told us that you left the formal side of the industry in terms of being aligned with a label.
A major. The major label, I call it the system. You know, it's so different now because of how music is put out there and with streaming services and how the radio has changed. And, you know, the whole game of the record labels is completely different now. But yeah, I wasn't really meant to be, you know, it's tricky. I think finding a great manager is really key to this whole process. But I think maybe I just wasn't cut out to be an artist with that kind of major label pressure. And sort of you become, the thing with that is then you become like the pop piano girl and then you're kind of, or at least I was early on. And then they expect, well, what's next? Is it going to be, it needs to be the same thing. So you fit into their slot, but also you have, and that's partly my fault where I didn't have I wasn't self-aware enough and I didn't have the plan that, you know, for myself that was strong enough where I was able to really communicate to them. Like actually that's not the direction I want to go. So, you know, organically and naturally, I am now in a place that is like totally supportive of the type of projects I want to be a part of. And for me, that meant leaving the major label system. And I still have a lot of friends actually at Interscope. That was where I was. And they're cool. And Jimmy Iovine was amazing. I mean, Jimmy signed me. And now I'm on Dine Alone Records, and I'm working on my third album for them. So
great.
It all,
so
or second album. Yeah, my second album for them, sorry. Yeah.
So your, you know, gratitude is part of what that was?
Mm-hmm.
You have this—
Absolutely.
You have this moment and the flexibility of the current technology that allows for this sort of wide open range.
Totally.
And you'll see what comes next.
You have a lot of, I think artists right now, musicians have more freedom than ever because there's no set radio styles or something that will lure someone off track where you're like, well, you have to sound like that. You have to write a song that sounds like this. You can get on that station or this or that. I just feel like all the lines are blurred, which is really cool.
Which we just heard with our wonderful tenor trio, Forte. Here they are. This last year, one just finished a stint at the Metropolitan Opera in The Merry Widow. Another one was just coming off of a major operatic performance at Covent Garden. He's playing in Phantom on the Opera on the Broadway. Josh and his brother, Zach, are all over the YouTube. And it's just, and these remarkable voices, you know, it's a time for go express yourself with your authentic talent, whatever it is. So, well, you've been a wonderful example, not only of creativity, songwriting, using this new pathway of artistry in terms of marketing and outreach, but you've also are very philanthropic and giving. And recently did something, let's just repeat again, recently did something for the folks, a family that was affected by the hurricanes in Houston. And you just saw a picture on CNN and said, I need to help.
Yeah, it's amazing, the internet. Like, you can actually help. If you see a situation that you want to help change, you can make a connection, like, in that moment. And that was cool. I mean, Twitter can be actually used for good.
Remember, Vanessa, you can quote Vanessa, Twitter can be actually used for good.
Yeah, yes. I actually even met my husband on Twitter.
Oh.
I mean, kind of.
Right.
Kind of. But yeah, I was able to get a piano to a family that lost their piano in the flood. That was really cool to meet. Just now I know Eric, you know, we have each other's number and he's rebuilding his house. And, you know, it's really, the world becomes very, very small on the internet. You can like really connect with people. So it's cool.
You can connect when you have a heart that's open to want to make a difference.
Totally. Right? The other thing I've been working on, which I'm going to go more public with it in a couple of months, if they want to renew the program next year. But there is, you know, KIPP schools around the country. Yep. I started a little dance program at a KIPP school in Nashville called KIPP Kirkpatrick. And we raised enough to get these kids a dance class during school hours once a week. Plus, and I don't know if they know this yet, but they're probably not going to listen to this. We raised enough to cover dance shoes and costumes for the end of the year performance. And I'm hoping that then I can raise enough this summer for it to go for a full year next year and just get these kids dancing. Because this is partially what why you're here and what we're doing. But part of the school day can be this moment of expression and almost like meditation for the kids. And I just think that's so powerful, you know.
Yeah, we were doing some work here in Anaheim, and I saw a video that they'd produced about children telling all of us adults why music in the school was so important to them. And it was one of those, you know, lump in your throat moments.
God, yeah.
A little boy coming on the video and just, you know, so honestly and innocently, but mostly honestly saying, it means so much to me to have a class in school where my feelings matter so much.
Oh,
you know?
I know.
No, it's not that they don't matter in math and science. We know teachers are loving and caring, but there is a connection, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
just expression. Yeah.
Their bodies, their soul, you know, and I just kind of went, well, I got to go home now. My job is done. You know, and that was on Tuesday when we started off the NAMM show. So
That's a beautiful thing, really.
Yeah. And your work, Vanessa, is a beautiful thing. And your intentionality about it and all you're giving to all of us. As I said, you've contributed to the soundtrack of our lives. And it really means a lot to us.
Thank you. I'll continue on.
Continue on.
Even if my three-year-old's not at all into any of my recent work.
Yeah.
Also, we social. I'm really just trying to win her over.
Yes. But remember, what really matters is she's really into you as mom.
Yes, she wants me. I can do. That's figuring out how to do both, and that is what every mom, you know, we're the moms that have to drop their kids at daycare and they go to work and then pick the. I mean, mothers are incredible. I can't even believe what moms pull off. Yeah. So,
and you're one of them now.
Yeah, we're all trying to figure it out in our own way.
You're on the line now, and we're all there with you.
Yes.
That's the other part of it. Well, thank you so much, Vanessa.
My pleasure.
We hope to stay in close touch. We'll be in Nashville in June, and Maybe we'll have a way to rendezvous when we're there.
I'll be there.
And your working mom coaching team is at the line for you.
Oh, good.
So not worry.
I'll need to consult. Yes.
Okay. And to all of you who have joined us here at Talking at Music Education, third day of the NAMM show, thank you for being with us at InterTalk Radio and being part of us at Talking Up Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. N-A-M-M.